Let's turn now to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And we'll read from verse 21 to the end of the chapter. Ephesians 5 at verse 21. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is head of the church, his body, of which he is the Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. And so, it is Mother's Day, and I thought, what better gift to wives and mothers than a sermon to husbands, how husbands should treat their wives. And so that's our subject this morning, how husbands should treat their wives. And as soon as I say that, I'm reminded of a story about W.P. Nicholson, who was a very famous evangelist in Northern Ireland in a former generation. And a lady confided to Mr. Nicholson. She said to him that she had a problem at home, that her husband was abusing her. And so Nicholson announced in the meeting that night that there was a man in the congregation present who was guilty of abusing his wife. And the evangelist said, if that man doesn't put a 10-shilling note in the offering basket, he would reveal his name. And so when the offering basket returned, it was full of 10-shilling notes. So that was a confession, an indication that not many husbands were treating their wives properly, and which of us here today could say that we are perfect husbands. God knows we all have failed. We have all fallen short as husbands, including yours truly. Indeed, dare I say that the last time I preached in this passage, I think was 34 years ago, and I found it really quite easy. I wasn't married then. But now, having been married, and my wife here in front of me, it's quite difficult. And so all the more reason, therefore, to study this marriage manual that the apostle has given to us. Now you'll notice that in these verses, this marriage manual, the apostle says far more to husbands than to wives. In fact, three times more to husbands than to wives. He writes a mere three verses or 40 words to wives, but nine verses and 115 words to husbands. And surely that must indicate, therefore, that we husbands have a lot more to learn and a lot more to do than wives. And I think as we proceed, you'll see that that is so. So just to recap very, very briefly, wives, addressed there in verse 22, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. And submission, as we have seen, it's nothing to do with superiority or inferiority. It's about roles and responsibilities. It's about two individuals becoming one unit. Submission is not something imposed, but it's something that is gladly and joyfully accepted. As the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Now, husbands, there's really only one thing that's required of us. Just one thing. And it's stated no less than three times. Verse 25, we read, husbands, love your wives. Verse 28, in the same way, husbands ought to love their wives. Verse 33, however, each one of you also must love his wife. So if you missed it first time, you should get it second time. If you missed it second time, surely you should get it third time. And so what's the one big thing, the only thing really, that husbands are required to do? Love your wives. And isn't it interesting that the Lord should charge the husband primarily with the responsibility of actually doing the loving? I think in today's society, it's expected that, well, the wife, the female, is the one who's to be, quote, lovey-dovey. But here in this scripture, the onus and the responsibility is very much with the head of the home, the husband. Love begins with him. Love begins with the head. And so if we husbands are to love our wives, we must therefore understand something about love. What is love? And so we'll have to try and define what love is. What is love like? Well, I turned to one dictionary, and one definition said, love is a very strong feeling of affection for someone who you are romantically or sexually attracted to. So love is a feeling. Even more than that, a very strong feeling. Love is an attraction. Love is an experience. Love is an event. So two people may say, for example, that they have, quote, fallen in love with each other. And so apparently it's just something that happens, which seemingly can't be avoided. But unfortunately, with this kind of love, as you can easily and quickly fall in love, you can just as quickly fall out of love. And so Hollywood and the glossy magazines and TV and newspapers have all contributed to this understanding of love, that it's a mere feeling, an experience, an attraction, that it's something physical. Indeed, too often, the word love is no more than a synonym for lust and for sex. Now, we shouldn't be prudish about the physical aspects of love, because within marriage, there ought to be physical attraction and love. And romance is good and an important part of marriage. It's something that married couples should cultivate. And the Lord is not prudish about these matters either. You just have to read the Song of Solomon to see the Lord's appreciation of physical love. But that romantic kind of love is not the love that Paul has in mind here in Ephesians 5. Because the word that Paul uses here in this passage is the word agape. That's the special kind of love that he is here calling upon us to exercise. So when he says, husbands, love your wives, it's that special kind of love, the heavenly kind of love, God's kind of love, that we are asked to exercise and to demonstrate. And so there's no better definition of love than 1 Corinthians 13, the chapter we just read, the verses 4 to 7. So here we see that love, it's not an emotional experience. Love is not defined as a feeling which comes, as it were, unbidden or unsought. Here we see that love is a decision we make with our minds. That love is actually more of a verb. A verb is a doing word, a word of action. That love is more of a verb than a noun. So love is something that we decide to do. And so feelings may come afterwards, but initially and primarily, love is a decision to do something. It's a call to action. And so when Paul says, love your wives, he's saying, be loving toward your wife and do things that are loving and lovely. So if you husbands protest and say, well, I'm just not the romantic type, it doesn't mean that you can't be loving. So then how are we husbands to demonstrate love? 1 Corinthians 13. Love suffers long and is kind. So love is a commitment, a decision we make to be patient with your wife, to be kind to her, to be considerate and helpful to her. Love is not jealous or envious of her. I've known some husbands who can't bear to see their wives outshine them. They're envious, they're jealous. But love is not selfish or rude, but courteous. Love is not bossy or proud. Love is not acting like a little dictator. Love is not proud. And certainly when we're married, we have no reason to be proud because our wives know all about us. They know us too well. They can see through us. And so they can see through any boasting we might be guilty of. Love is not irritable, is not easily angered. Love does not delight in bringing another person's sins to light. Love is not suspicious, but trusting. And love is not despondent, but hopeful. Love does not give up, no matter what the problem, no matter what the difficulty. So if you love your wife like this, it will be the foundation of a great relationship. And so love in marriage includes basic courtesy and manners. A minister once announced that a subject the following week would be how to get your wife to treat you like a king. Wouldn't that be lovely? How to get your wife to treat you like a king, just how you deserve. And so there was great anticipation, and there was a great turnout the following week. And so the minister answered the question, how can you get your wife to treat you like a king? And his answer was deceptively simple. Husbands, treat your wife like a queen. That's the secret. And so we've tried to define what love is in the biblical context. And so don't let the world, don't let the glossy mags define love. Let the Lord, let the Bible define what true love is. So love is a verb. Love is a call to action. Love is doing and showing. So how then should a husband love his wife? And in this passage before us, Paul, like any good teacher, uses illustration. And he uses two main illustrations to show how husbands should love their wives. Look at verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. That's the first illustration. And then the second illustration is in verse 28. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. And so how should a husband love his wife? Well, think of these two illustrations. The first one, we should love our wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And so this statement actually is one of the most radical and revolutionary things ever said about marriage. Because the Apostle Paul was writing in a day when wives were virtually nothing but slaves. When a man could have not only one wife but many wives, they were just an additional piece of property. And so therefore what Paul is saying here about wives and marriage is revolutionary. Indeed, what Paul is saying is merely seeking to recover marriage to what God intended marriage to be. And so the husband is to love like Christ, who loved his bride. See, the church is the bride of Christ. And Christ loved the church. And he gave himself for the church. And so that's how we are to love, as Christ loved the church. And so, wives, if you thought submission was a hard call, surely you should agree that the husband's call is a more demanding call. We are called upon to love like Christ, as Christ loved the church. He is our model and our standard. We're to love our wives with a Calvary kind of love. As the poem says, from heaven he came and sought her to be his holy bride. With his own blood he bought her, and for her life he died. And so when we think of love, that is the epitome of love, the apogee of love. Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. And so I must ask myself, and we husbands must ask ourselves, does my married life really correspond to that relationship? Is it manifesting that kind of love? Is it governed by that kind of love? Does Christ love the church any less now than he did before? When Christ gave himself for the church, when he died upon the cross, he demonstrated his love. That was hundreds, 2,000 years ago. And so does Christ, do you think, does he love the church any more or less with the passing of time and the years now? I think not. I don't think he can love the church any more. And I don't think he can love the church any less. He loved the church fully and perfectly then. And he has always loved the church. And continues to love his people as much today. And so, with the passing of the years, for those who have been married for many years, does love kind of disappear and just filter away? Shouldn't do. If our love is patterned upon the relationship of Christ and the church, our love today is not only to be as great, but in our case even greater, as we discover more and more of what we are called to do. To love our wives. And so that's the goal, that's the standard, that's the call. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And so this illustration shows us why love must begin with the husband. It demonstrates why love is his primary duty and responsibility. We are to love our wives as Jesus loves his church. 1 John 4:19 says, we love him. Why? Because he first loved us. And we husbands are to love like Christ. Christ loved the church before the church loved him. And it's not because the church was so loving and lovable that Jesus just couldn't help himself but love the church. No, no. Rather, it was while we were yet sinners, while we were rebellious and loathsome in his sight, that Jesus loved us and gave himself for us. And so he looked upon us with love in spite of it all. And he decided to love us, to set his love upon us. We were like Cinderella sitting in the cinders in all our rags. And yet despite that, Christ loved us. Christ loved the church. And so if, therefore, love has grown cold in your relationship with your wife, you can't therefore say, well, I can't love her because she doesn't love me. There's nothing there. She doesn't love me. What if Christ were to adopt that attitude? What if he were to say that? Well, look at these people. They don't love me. How can I love them? And so this is why the husband has the primary responsibility. Obviously, wives are to love their husbands. But husbands have the primary responsibility to show love. It begins with the husband. And so it is a hard call. But that's what Christian men are called to do. And so what we are talking about here is Christian marriage. And so while marriage is a gift from God to the whole human race, which is sadly being abused, we see here that Christians are to demonstrate a greater commitment of love, a greater display of love, because Christian men are to love as Christ, and Christian men are to accept the responsibility of being head and to seek to not only initiate but to maintain a love in that relationship and in the home. And so why did Christ love the church so much? What was his purpose? What was his intention? Well, look at verse 26 and 27. It was to make her, the church, holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without spot or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. So why did Christ love the church so much? That he might present his bride in all her glory. The church is the bride of Christ. He died for the church, that he might ultimately present the church as a radiant bride. And so, husbands, why are we to love our wives that much? Because, you see, we are to have a similar concern. We have a similar purpose. Because the sanctification of our wives should be our primary concern. Our aim is to see our wives changed, not into our image, but more and more into the image of Christ. Our aim is to help our wives grow in grace. Our task is to help our wives be the best possible person she can be and to be a godly woman and so prepare her for heaven ultimately, that she might be presented to Christ as holy and blameless. That was Christ's concern and purpose for his bride, the church. And so I put it to you, husbands, that must also be our concern and our responsibility as well. We are called to be a blessing to our wives. And so, husbands, we are all called to be pastors. We are all pastors at home. And as pastors, we have the responsibility to set the spiritual tone and to set and create the spiritual atmosphere and to determine the activities in the home. We are the head. We have a spiritual responsibility to our wives and to our family. We are to be pastors, spiritual guides. And so the challenge, husbands, to you and to me, is that do we love our wives enough that our desire is to see them sanctified and blessed? And are we willing to live for them and even to sacrifice our interests for her, if necessary, even to die for her. And so this is our responsibility as husbands, that we might see our wives grow in grace and in godliness. Yes, I know wives are to be a help to their husband, but we're thinking of husbands. We too are to be helpers. And we are to do everything to assist and to help our wives grow in spiritual grace. And so we don't have time to flesh that out, what that means in practice. That's a matter that can be discussed between husbands and wives. And so are you taking on that role, that responsibility of being a pastor in your own home and in your own relationship with your wife? And so how should husbands love their wives? Just as Christ loves the church. But then the second illustration, in verse 28, he says, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it just as Christ does the church. And so how do you treat your body? Well, most of us treat our bodies pretty good, actually. We spend time trying to make it look nice and feel good. We feed it, we clean it, we rest it, we exercise it, we protect it, and we're constantly thinking about it, aren't we? Maybe even right now. What are you thinking about? And so, husbands, we are to treat our wives, we are to love our wives as our own bodies. She is our other half. She is, Paul is saying here, part of your body. Husbands should love their wives as their bodies. Now, it's important we understand what Paul is getting at there. Now, that little word as, husbands should love their wives as their husbands, that little word as is a most important little word. Paul does not say men are to love their wives in the same way that they love their own bodies. I mean, that would be a good thing to do. And wives would appreciate that. But that, I think, is not actually what Paul is saying. The meaning is, so ought men to love their wives because they are your own body. See, a man loves his wife because she is part of him. And that, I think, is what Paul is saying there in verse 31. That for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. And so the one flesh idea does not merely refer to the physical union. Not at all. That's only part of it. Because a husband and wife are one flesh all of the time. A husband and wife are one body socially and spiritually and mentally and emotionally and physically. As Matthew Henry puts it so nicely, a man's children are pieces of himself, but his wife is himself. And so what Paul is saying is that you're not to treat your wives as though in the same way that you treat your bodies. That's a good thing, yes. But it's more than that. He's saying that your wife is part of your own body. She's part of you. Any husband, therefore, who abuses his wife abuses his own body. Any husband who bullies or threatens his wife physically or verbally or emotionally is actually inflicting self-harm. And that man is a fool. And so, therefore, it should be unthinkable that a Christian man should abuse his own wife. Because if he does, he's only abusing his own body. And so, therefore, on the other side, a husband who helps his wife is also helping himself. Hence the saying, and it's very true, a happy wife, a happy life. You see, the husband who loves his wife receives love in return. And it's been wisely said that marriage is an investment that pays dividends if you pay interest. And so, how are we to love our wives? Well, as Christ loved the church, and you're to love her because she is part of your own body. The two become one flesh, two people, one unit. And so therefore, it's a monstrosity if a husband therefore should abuse in any way his own wife. So we've tried to define what love is, 1 Corinthians 13. And we've been reminded how we should love our wives as Christ loved the church, as we love our own bodies. But then finally, how in practice, how should a husband love his wife? And Paul says in verse 32, this is a profound mystery. Now, in the New Testament, a mystery is not some kind of riddle, something unsolvable, but a mystery is something which is now revealed and we couldn't understand unless God revealed it. And so this is the mystery. This is now what Paul is talking about. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. But we thought he was speaking about marriage, about husbands and wives. And Paul now says, I am talking about Christ and the church. So why should a husband love his wife? Because actually, Paul has not only been speaking about husbands and wives, but he's also been talking about Christ and the church all along, in tandem, in parallel. And so marriage was designed to be a picture of Christ and his church. When God designed marriage, he already had Christ and the church in mind. And so this is one of the great purposes of marriage, to picture the relationship between Christ and his redeemed people. And so God designed marriage in order to put Jesus and his relationship to his people on display. And so when we understand that, then we can understand why marriage is under attack. When we understand that, we can understand why Satan wants to destroy marriage, even Christian marriage. It was true in the Garden of Eden. It's always been true. It remains true. Marriage is under attack. Satan wants to undermine and to destroy marriage, because ultimately, marriage was designed on the pattern of Christ and the church. And so when there is such a biblical marriage, that's a display, that's a statement, it's a parable, if you like, a living demonstration of what relationship Christ has with the church. And so because marriage is under attack, and because this is, I believe, the ultimate purpose of marriage, there's never been a greater need for marriages to conform to this biblical pattern. You see, we witness, we testify, not only by words, but also by our lives. And so when a Christian husband loves his wife on the model of Christ's love for the church, and when a wife happily submits to her husband as the church submits to Christ, it makes a powerful statement, and it creates a bright light in our dark world, because there's nothing our world needs to see than Christian marriages in operation. And so our marriage is a display, ought to be a display, of the relationship of Christ and his church. So what message, therefore, are we communicating by our marriages? If, for example, a husband abuses his wife, what does that say about Christ and his bride? Does he abuse his bride? If a husband neglects his wife, what does that say about Christ and the church? Does he neglect his church? If a husband takes his wife for granted, what does that say about Christ and the church? Does he take the church for granted? If a husband doesn't talk to his wife, if a husband has no time for his wife, what does that say about Christ and the church? If a husband is not protective of his wife, what does that say about the church? If a husband has eyes for another woman, what does that say about Christ? That Christ could just as easily abandon his bride and pick another? If a husband gets frustrated and impatient with his wife, what does that say about Christ and his relationship to the church? If a husband speaks to his wife harshly, what does that say about Christ and his relationship to his bride? If a husband never prays for his wife, what does that say about Christ and his bride? That he never prays? Yes, what if Jesus treated his church, his bride, the way we treat our wives? That's the call, men. It's a high call. It's a high standard. I feel, I'm sure we all feel. But remember, there is a context. There is a context. We can't attain this standard on our own. Remember the context. Be filled with the Spirit. Verse 18. We can't do this on our own strength. We need the help of God. We need to be in submission to God. We need the Holy Spirit. And as we are doing this more and more, I believe we have been filled by the Spirit, and we are being strengthened and enabled more and more by the Spirit. And so we can't attain this standard. It's only by the help of God. And so, husbands, love your wives. Peter says, 1 Peter 3:7, husbands, live with your own wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So that's it. Just one thing. Husbands, love your wives. And before we conclude, it may seem that, well, we've just been speaking to the husbands, and this seemingly has no relevance to anyone else, but actually it does. It has relevance to all of us here, because we all should have an interest and a concern for marriage and for each other's marriage. And when marriages break down, it's a tragedy. It is a tragedy, because the image, the display, the message which should be communicated is not being displayed, all because of the effects of sin. And so we regret that. So it is in our interest to encourage and to support and to pray for one another, even for one another's marriage. And there's some young people here who are listening, and perhaps they think, well, this is just for mum and dad, nothing to do with them. But actually, young men, this is what God is calling you to do. And maybe this might put you off marriage. It's such a high call, a high standard. But this is what God requires from Christian men and young women who would like to be married. How do you choose a partner? Will you choose a man who is this kind of man? A man who is willing to love like this? To love like Christ. A Christian man, therefore, who is in submission to Christ. And of course, there's widows here this morning and widowers. I'm conscious of that as well. But you know, you too are married, because Christ is our bridegroom and we are part of his bride. And so marriage, it is only for life, but our relationship, our marriage with Christ, is for eternity. And he loves us with a perfect love. And so while we may lose our partners, and we do and we will never, ever lose the covenant love the divine love of Christ, our heavenly bridegroom. And so we are concerned, therefore, to communicate that message. Christ loves the church, and we seek to show that by the way we live together in our own homes. Let's pray.